In first place here, Mr. Emmett Crowley.
Thanks very much. I was a poetry workshop down in John Island a few weeks back, and one of the tasks they gave us was to write a poem about an embarrassing moment. Right? So this is a girl called Billy. May sunshine, the cafe bar in Portugal, past plastic pear trees, blood and beer stained t-shirts, searching for a cure, last night vaguely remembered. A French beauty joins the table, long blonde hair, a short skirt, after drinks and flirting, forget her name, Billy. Strange name for a French bird, a tall, with a voice back to her hotel for games. I sit speechless, left out the cold that soars at 37 degrees. Paul buys a bottle of wine to go, as I say thanks, for the chat. Her short skirt reveals black silk panties and a large bulge. Saying nothing, I walk to the door. Paul will be surprised. Just the second one is walking over the weekend, it's called Breakdown. Sitting in dreamland, so happy, laughing to myself, dumb jokes I heard years gone by, while people pass staring at the mad bastard at his desk, a fresh drop of drool on my face, all I need is a bag of potatoes to be a village idiot.
Just to remind you that the MP3 podcast of Ian's reading tonight will be available on Avail over the next couple of days on the website, and same goes for the open mic. So the new faces here, if you don't want your piece, you know, just let me know and I'll edit it out before it goes up. So next up to the mic here, I think if the surname's correct, it's Mr. Alan Langley, is it?
Corkley.
There you go. Mr. Alan Corkley.
Friends, I bring you street smart writings for those who dreams of happier times. My vision clearing, the past receding. It's time for a change in the way we behave. Not them, not me, not you, but us all. We are together as recruits in the fall. Respect is the key, love is what's lost. And why, I ask, are you not shocked? Because my words are true and you've heard them before. It was Christ the Messiah who showed us the way, and Buddha before him had an enlightened state, and this orb in the Milky Way circling the sun. But tell me, my friends, what way will you run? Fast to be fruitful and show what you've done, or if your life's in the line, would you shoot a gun? If the answer is yes, then I don't fault you, but keep yourself safe and these questions won't haunt you. Contribute to goodness and know us what. Live quietly, my friends, we don't need heroes, but people doing good in little ways. A word of kindness here and there does more for the world than all the hot air. Be spoke by politicians and those with plenty. But be careful, my friend, there's no good sharing, unless you do it with an open heart, otherwise you might as well start. But back to the future and this vision of mine, do you believe me or am I just another swine? With empty words and a hollow heart, I know you've seen my type before, a guardian reader and vegan type. So what you say, it's all just hype about global warming and global strife. Or else you think that this is the way and think that things this way should stay. But poverty was necessary, they said before, and do you believe these words to the core? Or do you think there's a better way for us to spend our stay than acquiring more and more each day? There is, my friends, a better way, but you must find your own sweet path. I cannot tell you this way or that, though I can usually smell a rat. Those that shatter to be avoided, as are those who are angry, and those who curse, and say that things are always just. Beware of those who put themselves on high, or offer drugs to reach the sky. Avoid those who call you honey, and be careful what you do with your money. Now go and seek what I have found, a way to live close to the ground, but with honour and vigour sound. Now I certainly don't claim wisdom, or whatever, but I claim through my endeavour. Life gets sweeter every day, and that's quite a lot to say. Now the future eludes me as I write these lines, and why do I speak of personal times? Because the personal journey is the only way that humanity can enjoy a sweeter day. But not to be lost in the personal leader, that is the job of the true seeker. So back to the global and community strife, and why is violence right? Or should I ponder global warming or mental illness or isolation? Perhaps these problems are unified, can we be happy while one fourth starves? And is it merely a random chance that one fourth in the developed West have a mental illness? I maintain that it is not, and that our bounty is evil got, and that this exerts a price, a price that we should better pay by aiding those who are poorer today, and those within our poverty should be treated good and with honesty. There is no need to say the rest. You know the score, do its best. I wish you would find your way. The best of things this very day. This next poem is about the Ultimate Fighting Championship, and I don't know if any of you know it, but it's a new martial arts. It's mixed martial arts, and it basically makes boxing look like something of the Stone Age, and completely addictive. So this is the poem. Ultimate Fighting Championship. Blood, anger, guts, phlegm, I cannot take my eyes off them. Heroes meeting in the cage with calm, deadly, explosive rage. Chokeholds, armbands on the last, high kicks and takedowns. This is crazy fun for those of us too lazy to step onto a fighting stage. The violence sickens at first sight, but stay and watch a second fight. I think the courage you will see and learn to admire fighting free from guns and bullets, knives and bombs. The honour of a proper fight and men reaching their own summit, free from bomb and free from bullets. But I am disappointed to see the absence of beauty. The beautiful kicks of Taekwondo rarely match wrestling, jujitsu or judo. And as skill fighting resembles a brawl, the thing that strikes me most of all is that man is not made to fight or maul. We are built for cooperation, fighting is not our natural station. Not to say fighting has no place, and that is why I advocate this space, and why I believe that while the cage, while not perhaps the sitting stage, for black belts to display their skills, provides for us the necessary thrill. Okay, I'll leave it there. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Alan. I'm glad you're precious better than your handwriting. There is totally in my eyes. Next up to the next song, Alan.
Good evening. Ian probably wonders why I was listening, but you can probably tell now by the accent. I grew up in Gateshead, which is literally across the water from Newcastle. Gateshead, aye. And I'm a Newcastle fan, so... But, no, that's totally it. Tonight I didn't bring any book with me, I just wanted to tell a story and sing a song. So the story I'm going to tell is, I'm writing a book, it's called Tales of the Balloon Man. It's about my travels, it's about the people I meet and making balloons. So one of the stories that happened to me was last summer. I was talking to a friend of mine, a guy called Victor, who does balloon modelling himself. And he said, I said, Victor, I would like to go to Germany, Holland, but I would like to go to Europe in the winter. And he said, Aaron, why go to Germany in the winter when the World Cup is on this summer, 2006? So I said, okay, no problem, that sounds interesting. I thought it would be interesting to hitchhike to Germany all the way from Newcastle. So, got to Newcastle, got to Washington Services, and stood there, big backpack on my backpack, on my back, 20 bags of balloons on my back. And my idea was to go to Germany and make balloon models for all the different countries, make hats for Brazil, make hats for England, all that different type of stuff. So I hitchhiked from Washington Services all the way down to Lincoln. I got dropped off at Lincoln. And I got picked up by this guy who I knew straight away. Look, he was a bit of a traveller, you know. And going back a couple of months ago, I was hitchhiking from Ballinor to Galway. And I received a phone call. My bag was at the side of the road. And I wasn't really aware, of what was happening on the road. I was just in the state of the phone call. Next thing I know, a car had stopped in front of me, and before I knew it, I was in the car, and I got in the car with two travellers, and,
Where are you from?
I'm from Newcastle, where are you from?
From Manchester?
They sounded like they were more from Limerick and Cork, combination of Limerick and Cork, and they were asking me questions. Basically what they wanted to know is how much money did I have, where I was going, and how much they could get for me. So I was just in the back of my head saying, if I get out of my bag, I'm grand. I was scared. I was alone. I was, you know, on my own. And basically, they said, we'll take it the cost of €300. And I said, I don't have any money, that's why I'm coming. So they got from Ballinor to a little place, a town called Foxford. And just as they said they were going to drop us in Foxford, and just before they were about to drop us off, they said, we've got no money for petrol. And I said, well, I've got no money, that's why I'm coming. And they said, well, you must have something. And I said, well, I might have about €10 or something. So in my side pouch in my backpack, I had about €35. So I dipped in, and the first note that I pulled out was fiver. I dipped in the second time, and I pulled out a 20. So I said, so I gave them the money, and they let me out. So going back to this story, so when I got into a car with this traveller guy, I was a little bit wary of it, you know, but he was fine, and I put my foot in it. I said, would your daughter like a balloon? And he says, oh, that's my son. And so I made the little fella a balloon, and then he left me at the side of the road. I'm in Lincoln, I'm on the A1 going straight towards London, or going straight towards Dover. 9 o'clock at night, it's starting to get dark, and I said, Aaron, you've got to make a decision. I'm calling myself a decision, so I'll make a decision. Do I head on down, or do I stay and pitch the tent up for the night? So went to the side of the road, into the trees, and I pitched the tent up. Got through the night, and in the morning, I picked my tent up. I only pitched my tent up on a bumblebee nest. Bumblebees forming around me, and picked up my stuff and headed off to the services, got a lift down. Eventually I got to Dover, got to Calais, arrived in Calais about 8 o'clock I left on the Monday, got to Calais 8 o'clock on the Tuesday evening. In Calais, didn't speak a word of French except parlez-vous anglais. So got to Calais, eventually got into a hostel. I kept asking people, can I have a hostel? And they always saying hotel, because I didn't know the French for hostels, they just kept saying hotel. So I got in the hostel and then got on the road the next day to go to, my idea was to go to Belgium and then to out of Belgium and into Germany. So started swimming, I was hitchhiking for 3 hours, didn't get picked up at all, just struggled to get picked up. So walked back from where I was getting picked up, and I saw a bus terminal. And walked on to the bus terminal. I thought it was like a bus, where I'd get a bus from Calais to Brussels instead of hitchhiking. And it wasn't a bus terminal, it was actually a bus depot, a place where they fixed the local buses for the area. And when I was walking through the car park, there was about between 5 and 10 youths, it must have been about 14 to 16 years of age. I was by myself, a big backpack on my back. And I didn't know what they were saying in French, but it was things like, they were picking stones up and throwing them at me into the car park. And I'm alone, trying to make a few quid from balloons, didn't have much money, and nothing happened, but the fear was in me. I thought, you know, if these guys get a hold of me, they're gonna beat me up. Because Calais is a real kind of town for a lot of immigrants, and you know, with my colouring and the way I look, maybe they assumed that I was somebody from there. So I ended up talking to the guys who were working there just to calm myself down, and they didn't speak a word of English. I didn't speak a word of French. Eventually, I took about 15 minutes with them, and I was grand, and I walked out, and the guys had left, fortunately. So I got a train from. I said to myself, "What am I going to do? I'm going to go back. I'm going to go back home with my tail between my legs, or am I going to carry on?" So I got a train from Calais to Brussels, and I wasn't really in a thinking state. I wasn't really aware of what I was doing at the time. My brain was all over the place, and I just wasn't calm. So I wasn't making really good decisions. I was out of fear. I was just going forward, and I got to Brussels at 10 o'clock at night, and I didn't really think about it at the time, but Brussels is the capital city of Europe almost. Big, huge, cosmopolitan city, and I got to Brussels at 10 o'clock at night, and I said, Aaron, I'm going to have to find somewhere to stay. So I straight away went to an internet cafe thinking, at the worst case now, I'll stay in an internet cafe for 24 hours and just wait till the morning and get something. And I got in, and eventually I got a hostel, so I got into a hostel, put my bags away, and I was grand. I was happy out. The next morning, I'd left Newcastle, and the heat in Newcastle was 21 degrees. Now I was in Brussels, and the heat was 28 degrees. So the temperatures went right up. Although naturally I'm designed for heat, in my conditions growing up in the northeast of England, it's pretty cold. I've never been designed for the heat. So stayed in Brussels for the day, and then headed off to just to try to relax and get with it. And then on the Friday I said, okay, let's really make a go for it. So I left early, got a map to find out the next hitchhiking spot to go from Brussels to Germany. I got picked up outside of Brussels, and I got picked up by a young guy with family and everything. He took me and dropped me off in Liège. And I got to Liège, and was at the side of the road trying to hitchhike to Germany. 50 kilometres away from the German border, 500 kilometres away from Frankfurt, which is where I was aiming to go for the England game, which is on the Saturday. And I was over a million miles from Newcastle, and I literally broke down at the side of the road. I didn't know. I was questioning myself, what are you doing here, and hitchhiking to Germany, you're off your head. And I really believed in my soul and in my bones that if I carried on, I would never be here to tell the story. So I had to make a decision. It was either, do I go full on now, or do I go to Germany, or do I have to go back to Newcastle? And I said, you know, people are not going to hold it against you if you follow your heart and follow your instincts. So I left the decision to go to Germany, and I made the decision to go back to Newcastle. Now I was on the other side of the motorway, didn't have very much money with me. I ended up just scrambling for a way to get out of Liège, and I ended up getting picked up by a guy, and he dropped me in Holland. This guy dropped me in Holland, but he dropped me on the middle of the motorway. I'm in the middle of the motorway, so I don't have any money, and sweating and sick, and had to walk up to the embankment to get back on the road to Antwerp. And he said, if you walk a kilometer along, you'll find a service station. So I walked there, and there was still no service station, there was no service station. And I crossed over a road, and I saw that there was a car in front of me had stopped. And eventually I got in the car, and I talked to the guy, and the guy said that what had happened was he got a mobile phone call, and then the phone cut. So he stopped to check his phone. While he looked in the rear view mirror of it, he saw me walking. So he waited for me, said, "Hey, you doing the hitchhike?" And he picked us. He said, "If you'd been standing on this road, you would have never gotten picked up. You were so lucky that you picked up." So he picked us up, and I got a few other lifts, and then I got dropped off at a service station in Antwerp. And I was waiting, I was asking people for directions, asking, and nothing happened, and I was there for about another 3 hours. And this guy pulls up, and first English registration plate that I'd seen for a long time. British bulldogs over him, English flags. Guy gets out, shaven head, tattoos all over his arm. I said, "Is there any chance of you going to Calais?" He went, "No." He says, "But I'm going to Dunkirk." So I went, I said, "Do you mind?" He says, "Leave us 5 minutes." He says, "I've literally got to sort stuff out." Anyway, I eventually got the lift with him. The nicest man I've ever met, a really nice man, a guy called Brett. He basically picked me up from Antwerp, took me all the way to Dunkirk, got me on the ferry for free, and paid for a meal for me on board, because he didn't have any money with me, and dropped me 2 hours up the A1. A few more lifts later, eventually I got to Newcastle. I got to the Metro Centre, and I made a phone call to my cousin. I said, "Dean, I'm in the Metro Centre." "No, sorry," I said, "Hiya Dean, how are you doing?" He says, are you at the game, "Are you at the English game in Germany?" I went, "No, I'm in the Metro." So he said, "What happened?" So I went home. So that was just a little story there. Tonight I didn't have any plan of what I wanted to do. I just wanted to tell you a little bit about what I've done. I've got a little quotation which I think really ties in with that. It's not my quotation, but it came to me through travelling and meeting people. "It's the coming back, the return, which gives meaning to the going forth. We don't always know where we've been until we get back to where we were." only where we were may not be as it was because of who we have become, which is, after all, why we left. So that's... Now and then, I'm going to sing a song, just written by Jimmy Neal and Mark Knopfler. And you know the song, Big River.
Big River.
So, Felly's singing a song tonight, so I don't need the microphone. Oh, will I not be on the podcast if I don't sing the microphone?
You can play on the podcast if you like.
Yeah, I want to be on the
podcast,
but...
Oh, like, copyright wise.
No, it was a joke. What I meant is, if I sing without the microphone, will I be on the song?
Will it pick them up?
Will it pick it up?
Yeah, it will. It'll pick you up, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I can boost it. I get sued by Mark Knopfler, but that's, you know, that's another story, you know.
although it's an Irish man cut in the video of... All the Northeast lads when they were going to work in the pits and in the mines stuff was where this kind of happened. It was not just an Irish lad. I thought it was a wonderful man. I thought there was this song in here. Walking on cobblestone, little bits of skin and bone, jumping on a tram car for a ride, I can remember then. I was just a boy of 10, hanging around the old quayside, where all the captains and the cobble boats and steeple doors are gone, to where all the old ships go, but memories just like the seas live on. So that was when Corvus Gael, the river was a living thing, and I was just a boy, but it was mine, the glory time. This was a big river, but that was long ago, that's not now. This was a big river, but that was long ago. That's not now, that's not now. My father was a working man, he earned a living with his hands. He had to cross the river every day. He picked up the Union cord out of the Neptune guard, mouths to feed and bills to pay. There came a time for him to sail across the seas and far away. And finally when that war was won, it brought him home and back instead. And when his days were done, under a golden sun, took him back to where he longed to be, back to the sea. This was a big river, but that was long ago, that's not now. This was a big river, but that was long ago, that's not now, that's not now. The Neptune was the last to go, I heard it on the radio, and then they played the latest number one. What'll they do all day? What'll they supposed to say? What does the father tell his son? If you believe that there's a pond between our future and our past, we try to hold on to what we have. We build them strong, we build to last. This is a mighty town, built upon a solid ground.
And everything they've tried so hard to kill, we will rebuild. This was a big river, but that was long ago. That's not now. This was a big, big river, but in my heart I know it will rise again. The river will rise again.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Mr. to the microphone, Mr. Richard Collins.
Do you feel it in your gut, in your guard or your crash, in your sawn-off shortcut, in your head or your laugh, in the going out into the plains, to the hello, to the trains, to the people all around when you're with me and we smile and we walk in the rain for a little while, and you cry in the afternoon because I am empty, always filling you up with absent words of love, and the food and the wine and the couldn't spend the time to listen to your hope until you name me the next pope, the hypocrite of love, and you bent to kiss my hand in another land where I pretend to speak 8 languages and rule over the pigeons that flock to my square and wave to them all and to the sea with its waves that come to see me and the sea spray and the seaweed and the paparazzi waiting for hearsay, for heresy, for the day when I will be master. Will I really be master? Will I really be the earth? I'd like you to hold my earthy hand, but I prefer her hand to hold me when I am master. Dio cane, Dio cane di merda. Dio daisies and her smile. Dio kissed me for a while, but Dio didn't have the time. Dio didn't hear the chimes. Dio wouldn't grace the vision. She preferred chips and television. Dio drank and Dio sang. I read it, but she never rang. Searching through the rooms of an opening house for you, witch of the east by southeast, a sun on pale carpets through patio doors on a summer's day, I wake because you are not here today, and I wonder if you are the good witch or the bad, or a porcelain brittle caricature, dissolvable on teeming streets of guys you see, and turn around to me, the flesh and bone statue of your unheeding memory, an anecdote told to friends to illustrate a point over coffee, with reference to the waiter, an emaciated heroin queer, he stumbles by the weir on his way to work. I dissolved like the fishes, I transformed like the fumes in the breath. Beneath the colossus, I laid my bones out to die and suckled at my dreams. Twitching toes, broken against marble breasts, flowing through myself, I made inside a statue of my own body and of a monkey woman child, whose clumsy movements weave a song of white concentrated dust across the afternoon, in a spaceship looking at me with a frivolous look, a fleeting force of gravity. Wings of electric gossamer, whispered life and ephemeral death, and fingers grown across my sight to whisper to the sleeping joy of the dead who live in me. Sexy, under, where is my phone, meant, time to go home, friend, a stolen moment, forgotten sleepy stables, still as dissolving skin, disembodied on the street, walking home all alone with my bones. Braying, burning, imagining, touching skin, and laughing, tickle voices. Forgotten who I am I? Who's the question said before? Who whips the wooder waiting for? Who mees the owl to catch the cowl and coil the call around them all? And them to the way condemned. A bricky wall to bare her hair, to take her fur and kiss her peeping ears with deuced lips against the black white night. A stolen grain, I named the light. I aimed a match against the vein. I blows against your curling frame. I break the sea, and your lover's lame, legless, nothing last, nut-cracking, lying life.
No one should be scored by a figure, yeah? So we're not talent, yeah? Thank you, Richard. Next up to the microphone, always a pleasure, Mr. Cliff Bursley.
For all the farmers in the audience. Birdie, birdie flying high, drops his luggage from the sky. Angry farmer wipes his eye, thanking God the cows don't fly. Ian's reading in Limerick on Wednesday, and so I'll give you my favourite Limerick. Two old ladies from Fordham went out for a walk to get boredom. On the way back, a sex maniac jumped out of a bush and ignored them. I promised Ian that I'd do my hippie poem. Sitting on me beanbag with me joystick in the air, smoking marijuana without a single care, getting high on rosé wine with flowers in me hair. Hey man, I used to be a hippie. In me beads and me caftan, went down through the Isle of Wight to see Bob Dylan sing of love upon a summer's night. I even shared me bedroll with a girl who was a sight. Hey man, I used to be a hippie. Went to see the Rolling Stones play free down in Hyde Park. I even swam the Serpentine naked, I was stark. And then again, the skinheads burnt me nose just for a lark. Hey man, I used to be a hippie. Jethro Tull, the string band, Matt Dolan and T-Rex. Platform shoes and earrings and nylon polo necks. With only one thing on my mind, and that was teenage sex. Hey man, I used to be a hippie. Clapton, Ginger Baker and Jimi Hendrix too would see them at the Roundhouse. Hey man, they really flew. With Ginger drumming up a storm before the night was through. Hey man, I used to be a hippie. I'd spend all night in Soho singing in a coffee bar. At 3 a.m. the street girls came, thought I was a star. But when they'd smoked up all me dope, they said I'd not go far. Hey man, I used to be a hippie. With my little pack of Rizzler and me tiny block of dope, I thought that I was really cool inhaling all that smoke. But when I coughed me lungs up, it was me that was the dope. Hey man, I used to be a hippie. We'd walk across from Bunges to Cousins in the night. Soho was our playground with neon burning bright. We'd sing the songs of protest, thought we'd set the world alight. Hey man, I used to be a hippie. Simon and Garfunkel, Bert Jansen and Ralph McTell, he sang the streets of London, those streets we knew so well. Sally Free and Deasy still loved to sing, while Ewan loved to listen to Peggy's banjo ring. Who knows where the time goes, sweet Sandy Denny said. Who would think a pretty girl like her would end up dead? The passing years have faded into ancient history. Hey man, I used to be a hippie. Sitting on me beanbag with me joystick in the air, smoking marijuana without a single care, getting high on rosé wine with flowers in me hair. Hey man, I used to be a hippie. The end.
That's a bit of hippie noise. Next up to the microphone is Anita and Davey.
I'm fairly shy, but I'm getting into it.
Anita?
Yeah?
Can you talk into the mic?
Yeah. Doing okay now?
Yes, much better.
Untitled. In this arrangement of ferns, brambles, and ivy on the ditch, the tall nettles take their place, a roadside shaded by trees in all their leaves. Tom McAdam is the surface, and I have to tramp home on it. Tiny flowers with all the charm of lobelia, but they are here free to be described by me. Down and beyond are back roads. I will speak of nothing. There is everything to take my mind from the boredom. Etchings of leaves, tinged with red rust. They are held back, as people are in midlife. Down the stream the water goes and congregates in a pool. A scene too loose for the likes of me. But look, perfect ivy leaves on the cave, stuck in the water's approach, make the cove homely. Ferns decay in a brittle way and add depth to the scene. This honeysuckle, not belonging particularly to folklore of Ireland's own, lends elegance to my summer. As I get nearer to my home of isolated country, the weeds teem on the road's edge. Will you always vie for notice with cultivated shrubs on the other side strong, polished, decent, breathe easily, human hands. This one's called Independence. Don't want her control of my life. Don't want to feel sorry for myself. The leaf in my local park cuts the shape out of sky. Leaf is a gilt outline. It's her fault too, both of us responsible. I do not want you to plant me under your armpit, but to feel too much confidence. She holds me under the crook of her arm, urging me to wipe my snivelling heart. Leaf is bold relief in sky. She is 2 years older than me. She knows. Aghast at the realization that we are so far apart. To come together for reason of necessity. Some way to kick ass. Leaves carve shape out of wooden sky. Those thought structures do not comfort me. Path to the future. Her body is full of love handles. Not so fast to be crude. She wears a pink tracksuit jacket, softly curving in all sorts of ways, and white tracksuit bottoms. She spends her youth with her siblings, family, her mother and friends, and is employed by Tesco's in the day. She takes a quick look in his window and sees his profile by the light of his heater, full on, and his TV. There are city lights on outdoors. He smiles in her gaze and leans forward in his armchair to watch the TV. Excited. He has his own apartment. It seems like a den to him. He plays football with his mates and works for his uncle in a music shop by day. He hardly ever smiles at drink, and she has no fairy life or second chin. What does it take to meet him? Where does he go by night? She asks her friend.
Next up to the microphone, someone new to Avo, Mr. Gavin Ryan.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I used to live in Brixton for a bit, met a girl over there, I used to do a song for her, I guess, Angel of Brixton. Look at the brazen hussy, striding ahead of the men, shoulders thrown like punches. First to the bar, first to get drunk, first to bed, first to come, first to sleep. Smile, snarl, suck, spit, her eyes inviting, measuring, looking for a grand big cock of a man. She never said no, not once, ever. I was over at an anti-war demo, an anti-Tony Blair demo in Manchester, and wrote a poem of it. There's no end to history. A bearded crowd barefoot their way towards a full-coloured Guernica of whistles, chants, and police horses. Do the horses defend war? Maybe they're not horses after all, but soldiers in disguise. This is about death, after all. Behind the smug, righteous posturing of protesters and police, death in the Middle East by bullet, bomb, and radiation. 6,600 dead in the last 60 days. We are en masse. Our barbaric yob issues from 80,000 throats. Our special arrangement is with ourselves. Today, I will be a symbol, a cipher, a flag. I will lend my body to help spell out your name. Manchester, Manchester, Manchester. We have thrown a hooli in your veins, a much-needed shot in your arm, in your smokestacks and workhouses. Your ruined lungs cough up the red phlegm of revolution. This is a poem called In Malady Traitor Ground. Me and Henry Miller, drunkenly and lustily, set out like leeches, our caps and tops pointing heavenward. Miller nudged me from my musings to point out some tattered tights that revealed the yellow cheek. It was all ass and thigh and parted lips, breast and legs and haunch, no morsel of flesh considered inedible. We were carnal to the point of dementia. This swan like neck, this fat cunt, that rosy cheek and friction, always a build-up and release. I've had a sex change, a nose job, Botox, tucks, liposuction and 3 kilometer irrigations to come to this conclusion, that the writhing, twisting, gyrating copies in my mind and the shape-shifting addendum of flesh that dangles so amusingly would just as happily take a leak. And two more, I guess. This one's called Early Bird. Standing outside the early house in Fishamble Street, staring at the cobbles, the gulls wheeling and barracking overhead, the three of us unspeaking, only one thought between us, 15 more minutes of shame and thirst. And the last one, called Domestic. Can you just, forget it, I'll do it myself. Fuck you. The words crunched and swallowed like a mouthful of nuts into the stomach's tight fist. Thank you.
Thank you, John. I know that really has mixed up some accents, and someone who's no stranger to a role, Mr. Gene Barrett.
Thanks, Todd. I don't know if any of you have ever, this might sound rather shite, but any of you have ever saved a life, as it were, and there's a flip side to that coin as well, yeah? This poem is called Spineless Energy. The copper bench held him like a womb, volcano strong, and scarred from marrow to facade, blind. This crowd's parents working overtime to please, as he sat, a cinder of himself in turmoil, alone in loneliness. I prayed his hand would fit my mitten, have decades eaten childish adult laughter. Heroes of my world unite, infuse bravado. His life is but an uncomplicated sandwich away and begging to be eaten. How dare I save him? Thanks. This next poem is about, I wrote about 6 or 7 years ago, my daughter was going away, with the school, going away skiing or something, I don't know what it was, but unfortunately I couldn't be there when she was heading off, so I called it Laura. Laura. When you left for Dublin, as the beautiful woman you are, I wasn't there. I wasn't there like the many times over these last 7 years. I wanted to see her smile as you were leaving and donate a father's hug and kiss and to slip you a few bob. I knew it would have held me for that week. So I wrapped myself in guilt and instead I sent you love and wishes fit for a loyal queen. I visited your photographs more frequently and played your voice over and over and over. Your exiled spirit I placed in each title volume. And I treated myself to a peep. I searched for your hand at so many different heights, no grasp could I find. When the unfeeling world of work invited me back so soon after you were born, I wore your love like a cloak. I couldn't stop smiling. I replayed the time I left you in our house when I went to pick your mother up at the shopping center. You weren't with us 2 weeks. I was riddled with guilt, yet I knew it wasn't a punishable offense. I loved you more. I wore your whistle with the exuberance of Pipers on St. Patrick's Day, with the aura of a breastfeeding mother. I planted your weight in childhood garden. I weeded out the foes and torments, the buckling schoolyard punishers, and cleared the wax of influential pagans. I sowed adventure and ambition, a meadow of encouragement. These days you are my Pendle Bond of 19 years. A harvest of genius and imagination, a bucket of love and understanding. I have bribed your guardian angels to settle you a lifetime of safety. I am the student now. Adult education, a mere breath away. Thank you. This poem I wrote about 6 years ago, we finished studying with a 5-year course, and before the graduation we were encouraged to do some form of a ritual to finish up the course. So this is it. This is the ritual. It's called Horses and Jockeys. Oh Delia, how wonderful it was today seeing you wasp between the tambourines and tinsel, you and the snow leopard. And Ellen, my love, I scattered petals on your path and listened to that roguish bellow that is only yours. Woman, sister, lover, mother, friend, Claire, my stang of femininity, I've felt your Herculean fatigue. Alex, I have seen the door, it is still open. Beds, hats, teddies, moonbeams and sunshine, names, candles and fellowship, no sound but for the echo of humanity. Master of the hide and seek, you are not today, Donald, for I've found you everywhere. It was a pleasure. Horses, jockeys, caps and cars, and non-interpretive creations. Reflections of the inner journey greeted this flock. Yes, and when I peeped at you, yes you, I know that you did have fun and take care of yourself. I saw it from above as I slid down that rainbow of achievements. For the first time, I came first. Thanks.
Next up to the mic, Sinead Ryan.
How are you? Daggers and balances. Justice stands looking down on the child, weighing the good and the bad, the right and the wrong. But the balances tilt to one side, and on the side where sits good and right, truth and innocence, she slips the dagger and lets the blood pour onto the streets. This one is called Daddy. And Daddy had to go away, so Baby came to see. With sweet and seeing eyes, she looked and smiled into Daddy's soul. And Baby starts her life without Daddy's arms to hold her. Yet in the time before he went away, she came early, so her soul could dance with his. So Daddy had to go, but he went with Baby's little smile forever sweet behind his eyes, and she with Daddy's soul forever in her heart. And this one is called In Winter Find the Spring. A cold mid-January morning, snowflakes drifting on chilly whispers of air. Winter spelling the end of time, the end of something old. But those airy whispers bob the snowdrop's head, and the first little primrose dares to show its face, and the whispers catch and carry the secret of the birth of spring.
Thanks, Mike. I can see a bit confused about season of his uncle here at the moment. And next up to the next one, somebody new, a namesake of mine, the first to the venue, Miriam Casey.
The fan. The woman sat in the doorway, and all she wore in the Victorian twilight was a huge and very graceful fan. Her face was at the time of another world. The pressure of the glimmering light that portrays the length of human relationships and human truths. The men passed by the doorway with their ladies on their arms, but none would go within 20 paces of her. She was like a beautiful piece of a masterpiece that had a life of its own, and the men watched. They watched her every move as they chatted to their lady friends and took their pleasure in the room prepared for such adventures. There were many rooms set out. There was the room of play, the room of dance, the room of beauty, the room of charm. The rooms were decorated with chatter and gossip. The men were filled with the generosity of spirit as they drank spirits and bestowed all their attention and favour on the beauty on their arms. Then with giggles and much frivolity, they would smile and touch and seek the places of pleasure. They would descend the stairs, flushed with exertion and the joy of their enchantment. The music would be playing, sweet and teasing. The men would look to her as they descended the stairs, but there would be no contact. A huge chasm where they could not have the liberty to hold or cherish or have her in their grasp. Just the fan is appeasing the emptiness of all that pleasure. And they never saw the flooding darkness in her eyes, waiting behind the fan. And as time went by, the men's hearts began to grow more and more part of her. They could not move, without their every thought being of her. They went to the rooms to perform their acts of desire and intimacy. But as they looked for signs within the lady's eyes of passion, it was only her that they could think of, and they ached for the soft and seductive control of her fan, and they wanted her. And the fan seemed to have come alive, alive in a way that no one seemed to understand. It seemed to draw them nearer, make them want to take control, to have mastery. But they remained there, waiting, trying to tempt some sign from the fan, and the floor seemed to slip from under them, and they were on their knees, and they felt a deep animal scent as they came kneeling towards her in the dark.
Thank you, Maureen. Next up to the microphone, Mr. Seamus Harrington.
Again, I walk alone along the viscous sand and pause to cast a stone beyond the spit of land. A stretch of evening beach, that curlew's lonesome call, the lack of empty speech as scented shadows fall. And at low tide, the feel of sponge between my toes and green crabs gently steal beneath their seaweed clothes. A splash, you spin. Too late you'll spot concentric rings, perhaps a buoyant skate beyond low water springs. Vacated moorings mark sea's unpredictive mood and seasonal slipway stark where dinghy folk had queued. Steep ledge of rocky dome where free-range mussels grab in freehold shelly home the furtive hermit crab. Shy bait, compressed and dread, a culled sack dismay, 180 turn instead, leaves room to get away. A dainty wader bird, his rapier stabs so quick, to a girl he looks absurd, she's yet to learn his trick. Mature pierheads conceal, reversed inside his cave, the razor-toothed eel, I did have one close shave. Small fjord of magic spells, the final waves refrain, assorted layers of shells, sluiced well beyond a stain. A sconce of seascape sun, shards squinting to and fro, his opaque prisms run their pyrotechnic show. Inside the harbour's mouth, a brace of rocks portray the danger all about, unlit till break of day. The shame. The banquet table's lit by one candle's tapered flame, casting a tranquil glow o'er that scented feast of game. Divers foreign lot, deep in landlocked yacht, keen bloated guests are seated, every sire and dame. Now this pet bird was met by one called Evil Graham, not even airborne, but limping, without a Zimmer frame. His retort, so hot, foul jogging on the spot, but his excuse and victim were both extremely lame. From 5 meters off, the grandee took a steady aim, then coldly fired point blank, now sure to kill or maim. Preferring instant pot to instamatic shot of prize exhibit photo in the Hall of Fame. Even though from opposite directions they came, and each is unique due to a very different name. Fluid elements so hot, no extra words need blot, cause naked flame and teardrop are always shaped the same. Now this in the port of Gothenburg, there's a very high bridge. But trapped inside it, there's a very tall ship. And no way can she come out unless the masts are unstepped. And that's not going to happen because she's a huge tourist attraction, a hotel and restaurant. And this is the ship speaking, telling her story. And her name is the Viking. I'll have no truck with mock tall ships, bulimic tanks of liquid gold. I don't propose to bend a knee, and never would unstep a mast to suit that bridge that hems me in, to harbour years of gangway life. I'll stay secured and keep each guest, their posh hotel, my tumble home. My figurehead will often cast a jaundiced eye on Lego ships, with cargoes boxed in vivid stacks, bad-mannered ribs and soap-dish boats that skim across my basin berth, and towering hulks decked out in glass where bubbling pools of idle rich old landsmen soak their golden hinds. My secret wish has always been return again to naval days, the trill and ring of ordered steps, a manifest of fresh cadets to line the yards, parade of sail, those forecastle airs of every ilk, our master's voice across the poop, and gimbaled hours away offshore. The soundless mit, a bosun's pet, his musing gaze as flying fish play, and break about my lee cat head, in distant roads the windless song, transcendent moon, her ebb and flow. I'd love to seek a further voyage, secluded shores I've yet to trace, like sights within the piper's sound. And yes, I miss this canvas press, feel foot ropes dance where top men tread. At harbour's mouth, a lash of salt to rinse my plunging plimsoll line. A creaking sheave, the quiet routine, ice broken clear and furrowed frills, the scything wind at each crow's nest, a field of wheat discharged at last. Thank you.
Thank you, Seamus. Next up to the microphone, could we welcome Cozy?
This one, Pesso Pesso. I can give you half a sentence if you can give it half a mind. You'll need some sanity patience if the truth we are to find. Love in an elevator can leave a man half blind. What currency of your payment and did it hurt inside? I know soldierly stand accused, my own mother taught me how to break the rules. Be what you want and let the rest follow suit. Do as I say, not do as I do. Okay. The sense of violent tenderness. There's just so much I wish to express. So much, it's like, tastes like violent tenderness. The bitterness, sorry, let me start again. There's just so much I wish to express. So much, it tastes like violent tenderness. The bitter sweetness of yesterday's night, the moment that the old me died. Tomorrow's gone and been too soon. The trees are paving and the moon. Everybody needs, not everybody needs a padded cell, a private hell, a candy cage, or needs a private wage. Occurrence human frequencies can be perfected by prediction. In the future, we can bend sound, manipulate through fiction. The very fabric of fiction. If history really is a man-made thing, just how many of us will dream in sync? Thanks.
Thank you, Cozy. Next up to the microphone, could we welcome Mr. Tomas James?
First one I'm going to do is called, Meander. I'm out of precision, careful decision, and I'm betting on a setting. Switching, guessing, trying to be serious, but messing. It's dressing well, but like the smell. It's letting me be free, but may I tell? I see my hell, it's a real old smell. A vision, but runs no collision. But careful not to sell yourself ammunition. The fails or hail abyss, a sweetness kiss, remember this. Aim, don't miss. Try to be neglecting a promiscuous setting. Ambiguously selecting what will trigger us. A rigorous of messing. I needed some direction. Had to become my own protection. But I can't have more to this. Or my poor suffers a rigor mortis. This horse, it becomes a rip horse, but I toast to most. But it can't become a ghost. You may say that it's risky, but it inspires me at the end of the day. Which I decay, but I spray. But will I go, or will I stay? Will it resolve or dissolve, or will it solve or involve traumatic or problematic moments? Can I hack it? My head trembling, I rack it, my mind's at bend as I reprehend, realizing I have time to spend. Am I my enemy or my own best friend? I need some info, I'm turning ninfo. I'm young, strong, and dumb, but it's poetic sin, though. This one is called Cupid. I wrote it when I was reading Romeo and Juliet and listened to the soundtrack, and then I watched the film and I was like, oh my god, clear name. So I kind of wrote this for her, huh? Anybody knows her, right? Just tell them. I see thou walking still, so still for thy beauty expressed by glow, speaks to my soul, invites a health that one has never felt. Cupid stages purity. Inspired into my pages, compliment your tone. My archy is that of you in the throne. Your soul is a gown, extracts any hint of a frown. Let me impress, in a way confess, forget the idea of guest, for there lies a rest and thump on my chest. The heavens, I'm sure, will let you proud and patiently as you are presented to me. Your beauty feeds the mortal's propensity. How else should it be? An ambience of nature suggests thoughts and feelings which are mature. My thoughts become pure, forsaken of one shall ignore, because I invite thee to explore. Call upon a mind of freedom to digest the fruits of my kingdom come. For you my ink bleeds, and shall we plant these sensual seeds, explore, I suggest the deeds, and forget the burdens and trouble of mind. As night comes day, we can engage in time, become yours and become mine. Lend your ears to Cupid and feel his arrows penetrate. Hold no guest to the bed, let peace invade and meditate a passion from a thought to an action. Ignite a fire in which the quench will become a scorn. Be not afraid to turn, surrender yourself to using faith and create a melody in which we compose a composition to call a born-again passion. Become a mortal of intuition for their lies, the prescription to the insane mundane. Insane mundane in your membrane because your eyes pierce mine. Frozen in time creates a rhythm which then creates a sensual rhyme. But hold no worry, Lincoln ammo because yours is sweet. I can't sit longer on the edge of my seat because something is burning and I can't put it out. And a vivid picture is twisting and turning a lens, no doubt, of a sensual persuasion leaning heavily to mind. This fruit is fine because your gardens grow mine, but shall we express because your garden screams yes? Trying to rack my brain and think of another one now. This one is called Evil Twin. About a girl I was with, and on a kind of a New Year's Eve at 12 o'clock, I was looking for her, you know, when you kiss someone at 12 o'clock, they're like, yeah. I looked over and she was there, and she was down somewhere else to throw, like. I was raging. But anyway, that's life, isn't it? Okay, it's called Evil Twin, yeah. When hurt, it was hard to believe how people can be. From now on, I'll just look out for me, because I'm afraid of being let down, but I'm sick of being awful. I'm individual. I won't change, because my words were talking. I let this girl into my heart, what I call it, dangerous love. At first, it could compare her to the sense above. But things happen for a reason. I don't always know why, but maybe it will come to light when I die. I feel hurtful and I can ask to relate, but I want to help. Nobody will understand unless they felt what I felt. I'm trapped, and that's a fact, because she had an evil twin. She fooled me. She had an evil twin, and she fooled me. To be so open can at times be a curse. I can't stress enough how a bad feeling feels worse. Same turn thinner, she had a dark evil side. She broke my feelings and my heart, but not my pride. Yesterday she was a princess and wore a halo with a crown. Today she's a convict going white in the town. She kissed somebody else with her righteous tears. Tells of her love for me, so I opened my ears. But let bygones be bygones, it's chance number two. It's friendship only, because I can't trust her. I realise you can't trust the girl who cheats, because I talked to my friend's house and she lay between the sheets. Thank you.